You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. As the race for governor ramps up, the 9 remaining Democratic and Republican candidates are looking for ways to stand out. Earlier this week, Democrat Antonio Villaraigosa pledged to only serve one term if elected, saying, quote, "I would rather be transformative and successfully lead our state in the next 4 years than be mediocre for the next 8. He was the state assembly speaker in the late 90s and the mayor of Los Angeles for 8 years until 2013. He also previously ran for governor in 2018, losing to Gavin Newsom in the primary. Villaraigosa sat down with me on Tuesday to talk about why he wants to be our state's next leader. Former Mayor Villaraigosa, thank you so much for taking the time here on Insight.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So you, of course, have had a long career in politics at pretty much all levels of government, including, of course, Mayor of Los Angeles, Speaker of the Assembly. You are a born Angeleno, native Californian. How did working in politics shape your understanding of California's issues?
Well, I first got involved in politics, if you will, through community organizing. I was 15 years old and got involved in the Black Student Union, the United Mexican American Students. I led the walkouts at a time when on the east side of Los Angeles, we had inferior schools, secondhand books and desks, teachers that had been pushed out of other areas and transferred to our schools. I got involved in the farm worker boycott. I was involved in immigrant rights groups, even though I didn't speak a lick of Spanish. I've been a community activist, a labor leader for 25 years before I, got elected. I was in the civil rights movement, president of the ACLU. I got elected to the state assembly as a majority whip, majority leader, and speaker, and balanced 2 budgets with a surplus with a Republican governor and a Democratic one. Authored Healthy Families, millions of kids got health care. Later was a city council member for 2 years, ran for mayor. In my 8 years as mayor, we went from the most dangerous big city in America, most violent big city, to one of the safest, a 48% drop in violent crime by growing our police department, by expanding after-school programs, by dramatically expanding summer youth jobs. 1 out of 3 schools were failing when I became mayor. By the time I left, it was 1 out of 10, a 60% increase in the graduation rate. Number 1 American city in reducing carbon emissions, number 5 in the world. And so built more infrastructure than anybody in the United States. So what I've said to people, right now more than ever, we need a proven problem solver. At a time when we're at war in Iran, the White House is threatening our democracy. I think we need somebody to calm the waters, somebody that can help us address the fact that the state's not affordable, that we have the 4th largest economy in the world with the highest poverty rate. I think we need somebody right now, especially given the scandals of the last, few months. We need somebody who's going to focus on the job, is not going to be afraid to take on the tough issues because they might get, might not be popular doing so and looking toward the next job. Almost everybody that gets elected to governor wants to run for president. And what I've said is, I just want to be a governor.
And I mean, you've attempted this before. I was actually at your watch party in Los Angeles on election night back in 2018. You lost to Governor Newsom. Why give this another shot? What were the learning lessons from that race?
Well, the biggest lesson was what was clear at the time that, I didn't get in early enough, frankly. So this time around, I got in earlier. And I think the biggest lesson is that because we've gone through the last 6 years, I think people are ready for a problem solver. I think they're ready for someone to roll up their sleeves to take on these issues and not just talk about them.
How do you view Governor Newsom's 2 terms in office?
I think he's done some good things. I've said that before. I think he's, expanded child care, early kindergarten and preschool, You know, these are good things. You expanded health care. I think we kept kids out too long, 18 months longer than anyone in the country, any state in the country.
Private schools. During the pandemic?
Yeah, during the pandemic. Private schools opened up their schools and people didn't get disproportionately sick. In red states, they opened up their schools the same. A lot of them opened up schools after 6 or 12 months. We kept our schools closed for 18. And I think that's an area where we disagreed.
Hmm. I mean, in that time, affordability, wealth gap, cost of living, I mean, these are kitchen table descriptions of California's pressing issues. I think a lot of people are just dissatisfied with the responses and the solutions that have been thrown around. It's falling on deaf ears. Elected leaders have led with this time and time again. So what are some realistic ways you would look to make life more affordable for Californians, something that people can directly benefit from maybe in your first year in office?
You said it. This happened under a watch. This state isn't affordable. We have the highest gas prices, the highest utility in the United States, on average $2 a gallon higher than the rest of the country. We have the highest utility costs. They've gone up 60% in the last 6 years. We have the highest home prices and rents in the continental United States. Again, the highest in the continental United States. And so what I've said is I've got a plan, a gas plan. What I've said is we have closed 12 refineries over the last decades. If we close one more refinery, according to USC, gas prices will go to $8.75 a gallon. That was before the Iran war. So it'll probably be even higher given that the Iran war has raised gas prices. Well, why? How did that happen? I'll tell you. We overregulate refineries. We produce the cleanest fuel in the United States of America, maybe the world, and we make it impossible for them to exist. So I've said we need to put a moratorium on regulations that impact refineries. We need to incentivize them to use carbon sequestration and other air technologies to recapture the greenhouse gases they emit. We need to say to people that drive a car that, you know, if gas prices go over $5.50, we're going to give them a rebate. The state will provide a rebate. With respect to home prices, I've got a plan. I've said we got to build more. We got to build more workforce, affordable, market rate, and homeless housing. We've got to do a lot more in the way to cut red tape. We have a broken California Environmental Quality Act that allows you to sue even for reasons other than environment, that allows you to sue from Phoenix for a project in Palm Springs. That's broken.
The governor has addressed this during his terms in office, but you would go further.
We have to go further. One shop on shopping. When I was mayor, it used to take 2.5 years to open up a restaurant. By the time I finished, it was 6 months. We went from 12 departments to approve to one. We streamlined. We put dashboards to demonstrate that we were doing things in a more speedy fashion. That's what the governor needs to do. The next governor, of course.
You also were a former assembly speaker, so you really understand the dramatic ebbs and flows of the state budget here in the Golden State. So California currently facing a saga of budget shortfalls. This is following years of record surpluses during the height of the pandemic. There are expanded services like Medi-Cal, childhood expansions that have sunsetted or have been paused alongside just unprecedented amounts of money and funding on homelessness response. So given that the state, the governor, the legislature wants these expansions to happen at a time when we have budget challenges. We also have sizable federal funding cuts from the Trump administration as well. How should the state work within its means, like serve vulnerable Californians, but within its budget constraints?
As I said, we've done a lot of good things in the last 6 years, but we also have been in deficits continually, even during great economic times. Jerry Brown left us with a $300 million surplus. We were living in within our means. NPR needs to live within its means. They can't spend more than they got. Families and businesses have to do the same. So does the state. We're looking, according to the legislative analyst, somewhere between $18 and $35 billion multiple deficits in the next few years. So I've said we have a spending problem very clearly. And what we're going to have to do is to tighten our belt, make the tough calls, the way I did when I was Speaker. When I was Speaker, we balanced two budgets with a surplus, with a middle-class tax cut. I did it with a Republican governor, and the next, you know, working across the aisle. And the next year, I did it with a Democratic governor. When I was mayor, they said that LA was going bankrupt during the recession, the worst recession since the 1930s. I said, not under my watch. I left LA on a sound financial footing. We're going to have to leave for the next generation that kind of leader. That's why I've said I'm pledging to only run one term. I don't want to be one of those people looking so far ahead. You know how it works here. You get elected governor. You refuse or fail to take on the tough problems because you don't want to take on powerful interests. And you want to leave popular so that you could run for the next job. I want to focus every day on those tough decisions and not worry about running for the next job. So I've said, that's what I think we need right now. We need a leader that'll calm the waters, a leader with a record of delivering real results, a leader who understands that the next administration is going to have to make the tough calls to put us on a sound financial footing. Now, we can't just cut our way out of these problems because the problems are gargantuan. So why aren't we growing our businesses? Why are we pushing out so many businesses in the state? And, you know, the fact is we've got businesses hemorrhaging and going to Texas and Florida, and we've got high net worth individuals doing the same thing. I want to keep those people here. I want to create the good jobs here. That's what I did as mayor. You know, we were in a recession. I told you we were looking at cutting. You know what I did? Cutting services and employees. I cut the gross receipts tax. I made it. I gave a tax holiday. Made it free to come to LA to start a business. And we grew our businesses and grew the revenue as well. So we did an all of the above strategy to live within our means, making the tough choices, the tough cuts you have to make, at the same time growing the economy and growing our businesses.
So the population of the city of Los Angeles is more than like nearly half of the states in the country, you know, 22 to be exact. What is your relationship with the rural parts of California?
Well, actually, L.A. is larger than many states. We're the 16th largest economy or 17th largest economy in the world.
And that may worry some people in rural parts of the state. We've had this conversation a lot on our show that it's not necessarily about political party divides in California, but a difference between rural and urban views. Those in rural parts of the state feel overshadowed by large metro politics.
Well, I've spent a lot of time in the Central Valley, a lot of time in the Imperial Valley. What I can tell you is this. We need to grow together as a state. We can't just grow good jobs on the coast. We have to grow them in the Central Valley. We have to support our farmers and our farm workers. We've got to address the challenges of leaving so many communities behind, including our rural communities. So I've understood that, which is why I've spent as much time in the Central Valley and in the farming communities I have.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to the former mayor of Los Angeles, Antonio Villaraigosa. He is one of the Democratic candidates running to be California's next governor. So there remains a large field of candidates already, 9 in total. 7 are Democrats. And there have been those growing concerns that the Democratic vote could be diluted in the primary, possibly the 2 Republican candidates advance to the general. The own state party chair, Rusty Hicks, had called for lower polling candidates to essentially drop out of the race. I mean, that would include you. Your polling is currently at around 4 or 5%. How do you respond to that?
Noise. It's just noise. They were talking about a candidate who was leading in this race and has now dropped out of the race.
Yeah, Representative Eric Swalwell.
35% of the electorate is undecided. A big portion of them are Latino. A lot of them are people that are looking for a common sense, competence, and a course correction. And so people haven't really been covering this race, frankly. Donald Trump sucks the air out of the news and the news cycle. And I think now people are starting to focus. You know, it's interesting because what we have today is an electorate that's working hard every single day, and they haven't been focused on this election. And now they will be. What happens too much here in Sacramento is we go with the first shiny object. One of the things after 3 different scandals, because that's what we've had, Eric Swalwell is the last scandal. The first one was Katie Porter and the way she treated her staff. It went viral. Get the F out of my picture. The way she stood up and almost walked out of a interview when a reporter asked her a simple question. And then it was Javier Becerra, whose chief of staff was indicted for compensating his salary with Becerra's campaign funds. At the end of the day, I think we need proven leadership. I think we need someone to calm the waters and someone who understands we've got to make the state stronger, take on the challenges, and then pass the baton to the next generation of leaders.
Do you think it's a realistic possibility that 2 Republicans advance?
No. Let me tell you why. Trump just endorsed Hilton. We saw this movie. You said I was in a race before. We saw this movie before. Cox was at 6%, so was Travis Allen. With Donald Trump's endorsement, his vote went up to 26%. I expect that a Republican will come in first, a Democrat second in the primary, and then the Democrat, like last time with Gavin and Cox, the Democrat will win by 20 points.
Hmm. Finally, if elected governor, how would you respond to the Trump administration? Would it be in line with Governor Newsom's, who has a strong adversarial approach? Would you take a different tone?
Well, first of all, Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. He's targeted California. You know, the Palisades and Altadena still haven't gotten all their FEMA money because Donald Trump is holding it up. These tariffs hurt us disproportionately. Tariffs are taxes. Why does it hurt us disproportionately? Because our 3 biggest trading partners are Mexico, China, and Canada. We export more goods than anyone else. And so what's clear is we do have to check. The ICE raids are an abomination. They're violently arresting people in military-style deportations, covered from head to toe, unidentified, grabbing children from the arms of their parents in schools, parks, schools, hospitals, and places of business. And what I've said is that's unacceptable. I have an ICE plan that says in our state, we will supervise the health and safety of people in detention centers, children in detention centers. Warrantless arrests will not be allowed in our state. But at the same time, I'm not going to spend all my time memeing him and making fun of him. He is what he is. We will challenge him. Who better to do that than someone who came out of the civil rights movement, former president of the ACLU, a labor leader? I've been fighting the right my whole life. But we've got to accept that a lot of the problems we have, homelessness, housing, affordability, happened under our watch. And I intend to take on that challenge, even if it means taking on my friends.
Mayor Villaraigosa, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Democratic candidate for governor Antonio Villaraigosa, recorded on Tuesday. You can find all the candidate interviews we do, including our previous one with former state controller Betty Yee, on our website at capradio.org/govrace. Still ahead, over 200 local authors will be convening this weekend as the Sacramento Book Festival returns for its third year. We'll talk to three of the featured writers who will be there. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.